At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, Genesis chapter 25. All right, so you just had the birth. Well, you had the birth of Isaac, the binding of Isaac, the death of Sarah, which is Isaac's mother, and he was grieved about that. Then Isaac marries Rebecca, and he starts to feel a little bit better after marrying Rebecca. And then let me see. That was the last. So I'll read the last verse of Genesis chapter 24, then get into 25. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So now we're getting into the descendants of Isaac. Chapter 25. Abraham took another wife, whose name was Keturah. She bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak and Shua. Jokshan fathered Sheba and Dedan. The sons of Dedan were Asherim, Letushim, and Lemumim. The sons of Midian were Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Eldah. They were the children of Keturah. Abraham gave all he had to Isaac, but to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts. And while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Isaac eastward into the east country. These are the days of the years of Abraham's life, 175 years. Abraham breathed this last and died in a good old age, an old man full of years, and was gathered to his people. Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar and the Hittite, east of Mamre, the field that Abraham purchased from the Hittites. Then Abraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. After the death of Abraham, God blessed Isaac, his son, and Isaac settled at Beer Lahai Roy. These are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's servant, bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael, named in order of their birth. Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, Kedar, Abdil, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hada, Tema, Jetur, Nafish, Kedemah, these are the sons of Ishmael, these are their names, by their villages and their encampments, 12 princes, according to their tribes, these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. He breathed his last and died, and was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is opposite to Egypt in the direction of Assyria. He settled over against all his kinsmen. All right, so this is just kind of tying up the loose ends. This is what happens with Abraham. It's kind of unclear because it talks about the kids of his concubines. So is he technically married to the concubines in that culture? It's kind of a gray area. So this is why it talks about it says wives and his wife, and then he takes another wife, and then it talks about the kids of his concubines and stuff. You'll notice never in all of this does God ever once say it's a good thing for Abraham to have concubines. So if there's people who go and they say, well, you know, there's polygamy in the Bible, there's people with concubines in the Bible, therefore it's a good thing. Just because it's in the Bible doesn't mean it's a good thing. I mean, Cain killed Abel in the Bible, that wasn't a good thing. It doesn't mean you're allowed to kill your brother when he finds favor with God or whatever. So in Abraham's case, that he has concubines and that and basically everything to do with Hagar, God never told him to do this. So just because Abraham did it doesn't mean that he's good. Now Abraham, sinner though he is, still was faithful and still is honored by God. And so the promises that God made to him and God made to his descendants continue. So it isn't because Abraham was a sinful, imperfect person that God took away his promises. God makes promises, God keeps promises, even when the people are sometimes undeserving. So anyways, that section is just going to be the genealogy. The next section is probably going to be dealing with characters that you definitely are familiar with. Although one of them changes his name or gets his name changed later on, just like Abram went to Abraham. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's a, yeah. There's kind of a, Abraham does play favorites a little bit with his descendants. So Ishmael is his firstborn, though technically not to his wife, to the servant of his wife, which is its own sort of drama. So Abraham likes Ishmael. Sarah hates Ishmael. Sarah hates Hagar. And God does give a promise to Hagar and Ishmael, but they don't get the same blessing as Isaac. So yeah, the two big families are going to be Isaac's family and Ishmael's family. The other ones that come later on after Sarah dies, they're kind of lesser. I think you might see some interactions with some of their descendants. But if you look at Ishmael's descendants, they all turn into these big tribes that Israel is at war with for years and years. So that's right. So according to Islam, not only do they count Ishmael as their father, but they say that the promise is through Ishmael, not through Isaac. So that's kind of a distinction there. But yeah, so the Ishmaelites war with the Israelites in perpetuity. This is an ongoing thing. The fact that we have Muslims in the world is because of Ishmael, is because of Hagar and Abraham. Who could say what the world would be like if Abraham had not done that? But the actions.
That's not quite correct. Right? Because Islam was 600 AD.
Right.
They were always promised to be at war with each other.
Right.
But to follow a false religion wasn't part of the promise.
Right. So it isn't, yeah. So it's like making a distinction between the Arabs and the Muslims.
Right.
So the Arabs, what we refer to as the Arabs, that's a really clunky term. Those would basically be the genetic descendants of Ishmael. And not every Arab is Muslim. There's lots of Christian Arabs. There's lots of different groups or whatever. But generally, the religion, the false religion of Islam, which comes around in around 600 AD, 600 something AD by Muhammad, these people are referred to for a while in history as the Ishmaelites, or the Mohammedans. If you read C.S. Lewis, or even if you read the early American founding fathers, I think it refers to the Ishmaelites or the Mohammedans or whatever. The term Muslim kind of comes up later, but the connection is made that through the Arabic people, a false religion develops, just like through the descendants of Israel, through the Hebrews, false religions of Judaism develop. It's not that Judaism is halfway to Christianity. It's the Judaisms that deny Christ, they are a false religion. They are different. They are just as much off the mark as Islam is off the mark. So the result of these, genetically, what would the world be like if the descendants of Ishmael hadn't existed? Presumably, there wouldn't be an Arabic people. What would that mean in terms of would Islam exist? Or it's complicated, but generally, historically, the connection is made between Islam that comes around in 600 AD and Ishmael as the descendants. But it's not as cut and dry as, and then Ishmael bore Muhammad, and Muhammad created the religion in 2000 BC or whenever this was BC. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a connection there, and historically people have made this connection, but it's not that every Arab is Muslim. It's not that, anyways. That being said, even in that case, even without Islam, you see the descendants of Ishmael turn into these great tribes, a lot of the Ites. I think it's like the Amorites, the Jebusites, the Perizzites, and stuff like that. You'll see a lot of Ishmael's children develop into these. And we'll see real quick with Jacob and Esau that Esau's descendants, I believe it's the Ebionites, those are the ones that come from that, and Israel has problems with them too. So the descendants of Israel constantly make enemies, usually, well not always, but usually it's enemies with people who are related to them. Ultimately, if you go far enough back, you've got the Egyptians and the Babylonians and stuff like that. But a lot of the Ites, those are people related to the Israelites more closely. All right, chapter 25, verse 19. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Paddan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer. Rebekah, his wife, conceived. All right, I'm going to pause right there real quick. So Rebekah was barren. Sarah was barren. This is a constant recurring theme to pay attention to in the Bible, that you have people who are not supposed to give birth naturally, like the Virgin Mary, giving birth. Or like, who else was it? There's a couple of other people. But basically, barrenness, some people would see it as kind of a curse, but really, barrenness, God often uses this inability to have children as a way of stepping in and saying, look, God is powerful enough to overcome the natural limitations, the biological limitations of a person. So through prayer, this is how, so Isaac prays to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. The Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Thanks be to God. The children struggled together within her, and she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? She went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. Interesting. So you've got the kids fighting in the womb. They're already pulling each other's, well, they wouldn't have hair, pulling each other's noses. Verse 24, when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, his body like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. What a true family dynamic. My beloved Esau, my firstborn, my burly son, my manly son. And then there's that twerp Jacob. And they call him Jacob because he's heel grabber is what they're calling him. And heel grabber, it's not a nice term. Basically, it's... Dragging someone back. Kind of like dragging someone back. It's clinging on to somebody else's success. It's betraying somebody. It's being sneaky is kind of what it is. Yes?
Riding the coattails.
That's a good one. Riding the coattails, holding the heel.
Italian, they call them Fredos.
Fredos? Oh, jeez. Yeah, like that, like in Godfather, 2, I think? Anyways, so it's interesting. Yeah, so Esau is firstborn. Esau is, again, I can't help but think about this dynamic of like Cain and Abel, where you have the firstborn, and the firstborn is, a hunter or, everything that you would expect, from God is going to choose this person. This is going to be the chosen one that God is going to use to bring about salvation. Cain, that wasn't the case. It ended up being Seth. Esau, that's not the case. It ends up being Jacob. Saul, that's not the case. It ends up being David. All of David's brothers being bigger than him and everything like that, that didn't do him any good. Being born before him didn't do him any good. And something to consider is at this time you have this system where firstborn meant a lot. You give your inheritance basically, or like the primary portion, to your firstborn son. If somebody's going to carry on the family name, presumably it's going to be the firstborn, and then it kind of rolls downhill. So if you're the lastborn, you get the scraps, the hand-me-downs, and stuff like that. So what God does is God has his own order, and in spite of the human order, the way that humans generally did things. So again, Isaac even favors Esau. So Isaac, the patriarch's favorite person is Esau. The firstborn is Esau. The stronger is Esau. Everything points to Esau being the one who's going to take the promise. Jacob, the conniving little heel grabber, it's not going to be him. Nobody's going to count on him carrying on the promise. All right. The boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. I don't want to read too much into that, but yeah, it does. Jacob kind of seems, he's the quiet type. He's not so useful. As have you seen Esau, my son? Oh, don't worry about Jacob. He's doing his own thing. I don't know. playing with sticks and stuff.
He's a mama's boy.
He is a mama's boy. That comes into play too, because Jacob loves his mom, and his mom loves Jacob. So that is what leads to this. Verse 29. Once while Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted." Therefore his name was called Edom. It's like, hey, let me have some of that stew. Therefore, his name was called Campbell's Chicken Noodle. Like, I don't know. I think we should still do that. Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright now." Esau said, "I am about to die, so what use is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me now." So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau the bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. This is interesting. So it said he sold his birthright. It didn't say he hated his birthright. But by getting rid of the blessing that was coming to him, he despised it. This is an interesting piece of language here. So Esau did not, to despise something in this way means not to value it. You know, I'm going to die. He doesn't trust that God's going to take care of him. He doesn't trust that the birthright, you know, that he's going to take care of the birthright. He says, yeah, fine, whatever. Whatever blessing God has for me, I don't care, I just want food. He's throwing away something eternal for something temporary. That's going to be a theme in the sermon today. Chapter 26. But note that he did it of his own free will. Now Jacob was, you know, hey, sell me your birthright, which you could, okay, that's kind of sneaky, but to be fair, Esau didn't really get tricked. Esau was like, okay, I'll take this extremely valuable thing. You can have it, sure. For food, I don't care. And part of that might be that he didn't actually trust that he sold his birthright, but God noticed. So chapter 26, now there was a famine in the land beside the former famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your offspring I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of the heavens, and I will give you to your offspring all these lands, and in your offsprings all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." All right, so don't worry, they will get into Egypt at some point. But not quite yet, not in this generation. So Isaac settled in Gerar. When the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, "She is my sister." Like father, like son. You gotta be kidding me. So Abraham does this two times, and Isaac does this one time. Like, you would think that they learn from now. Okay. He said, "She is my sister," for he feared to say "my wife," thinking lest the men of this place should kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance. When he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Pharisees, looked out his window and saw Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife. So Abimelech came to Isaac and said, "Behold, she is your wife. How could you say she is my sister?" Isaac said to him, "Because I thought lest I die because of her." Abimelech said, "What is this you have done to us? One of the people might have easily lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us." So Abimelech warned all the people, saying, "Whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." Hebrew is hilical. I keep saying this. The stories, they're not the exact same story, but they keep hitting the same points again and again. This is the third time that this almost exact thing has happened. Verse 12, "And Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold. The Lord blessed him, and the man became rich, gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flock and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And Abimelech said to Isaac, 'Go away from us. You are much mightier than we.'" This is also going to be a theme that you see later on with the Israelites and the Egyptians. They're concerned with how powerful, how many people there are. Verse 17, "So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water that had been dug in the days of Abraham, his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. And he gave them names that his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there was a well of spring water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, 'The water is ours.' So we called the name of the well Esek. because they contended with him. Then they also dug another well, and they quarreled over that also, so he called its name Sitnah. And he moved from there, dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it, so its name was called Rehoboth, saying, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." From there he went up to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am with you and will bless you and multiply your offspring for the sake of my servant Abraham." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. When Abimelech went to him from Gerar with Ahuzah, his advisor, and Philcol, the commander of his army, Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, saying that you hate me and have sent me away from you?" They said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you. So we said, let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us. Let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and not done anything, and done to you nothing but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now blessed of the Lord." So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. In the morning they rose early and exchanged oaths. And Isaac sent them on their way, and they departed with him in peace. That same day Isaac's servants came and told him about the well that they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." He called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basmath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they made their life better for Isaac and Rebekah. Okay. Bitter. Yes. Bitter. That's a good distinction.
Water Sheba.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we're seeing another one of these things where God doesn't tell people to take multiple wives, but pretty much every time in the Bible where you see a husband taking multiple wives, including Solomon has like 1,000, or he has, I don't remember how many, and he's got 1,000 concubines or something, it doesn't end well. So again, anybody who argues, this Bible is this backwards book, and you have people taking multiple wives, and it supports polygamy, I don't see any support in here for polygamy. I just see people doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and then eventually there's consequences. There's pretty negative consequences. All right, here's back to the story that you guys are probably familiar with. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." He answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons and your quiver and your bow and go out to the fields and hunt and gather for me and prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Isaac is such a gourmand. He really likes his food. It's interesting that it specifically says this is why he likes Esau, is because he likes his food. Verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me a game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me 2 good young goats so that I may prepare them for delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man." I wonder the Hebrew term for that. "I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself, not a blessing." His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go and bring them to me." Interesting. So although it's Jacob's plan to get the birthright, and he's the one who buys the birthright for a bowl of stew, his mother is entirely on board. And you could talk about that this is dishonest, this is deceptive, all these other things. It's going to be chapters later, the phrase where what somebody intends for evil, God uses for good. What you intended for evil, God uses for good. So even in these cases where they're trying to, they're being naughty. They're not doing the right thing. Esau wasn't doing the right thing either when he sold his birthright. But God ends up working out the plan of salvation the way he's always planned through this. So God doesn't cause them to sin, but he uses their sin to accomplish what he always planned. So obviously, excellent example is Christ dying on the cross. It's not good to crucify innocent people. Just generally speaking, that's called murder. But God uses that sin to accomplish something great. And that's a similar case here. Verse 14. So he went and he took them and he brought them to his mother to prepare delicious food such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in her house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the young goat she put on his hands and the smooth part on his neck. And she put delicious food and bread, which she had prepared, into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game so that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it you have found it so quickly, my son? You know, why, how, you know, my grandma, what big eyes you have. What big ears you have." He answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." Like, if he's this suspicious, I don't know. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, "That voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He answered, "I am." And he said, bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it near to him and he ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let the people serve you, nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed everyone who blesses you." As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father, and he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" He answered, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it before you came, and I have blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed." As soon as Esau heard these words of his father, he cried out with exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times." Again, Jacob meaning heel grabber, meaning sneaky trickster. "He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing." Then he said, "Have you not received a blessing for me? Or have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Excuse me. Isaac answered Esau, "Behold, I have made him lord over you and all his brothers. I have given him your servants with grain and wine and have sustained him. What can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. And she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why shall I bereft you of both in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite woman. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me?" All right, so this plays out horribly for Jacob, at least so it seems. Now, we know what happens later on in the story, but from Jacob's perspective, his older brother, who is very capable of killing him, again, Jacob's the sit inside on the computer, watch TV kind of guy. What do they call him? My smooth skin son or something like that? He is, yes. So he has every right to be terrified. And who knows, Esau like specifically says he's going to kill Jacob. So Jacob runs off. Now you remember Laban's been mentioned a couple times before, and this is really the part of the story where Laban plays a bigger part here. Also keep in mind, remember that Esau had already married, what, two women so far at least? Esau was 40 years, he took Judith, the Hittite, and Basmath, another Hittite. So Rebecca is really saying, like, man, these Hittite women that Esau keeps marrying are making my life miserable. I really, really hope that Jacob doesn't marry a Hittite woman. All right, chapter 28. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise and go to Padan Aram, the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take as your wife from there one of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham. Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he took and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau's mother. Okay, so this is a real person. It gives you the genealogy just to show you who's who. It might be easier to kind of have a chart to check these things off. Isaac, even though he's been tricked by Jacob, does not rescind his blessing. Yes, sir.
I just think that Jacob gets his comeuppance with his dealings with
Laban. Yeah, Jacob doesn't get off scot-free. Now, a lot of times it takes a while for God's justice to kind of work. Or God is kind of working justice in his own time, is what I mean to say. Jacob doesn't get off scot-free. Jacob did some bad stuff, but he does still receive the blessing from Abraham. The blessing stays intact. And it's interesting, Isaac. Even though Isaac was deceived, he doesn't go back on his word. The blessing that he gives is not something that he takes back. And in a similar way, the blessing that God gives to you, to his people, to the believers, even if you are a sinner, for example, the blessing doesn't get taken away. Now, God the Father was not deceived. But there is a parallel here in the way that we receive the blessing of the Father through putting on Christ. The Bible talks about in baptism, you have put on Christ, like a garment it talks about, the righteousness of Jesus. Now, God the Father's eyesight is not poor, but this is something that he goes along with, that when you approach the Father, you can approach him as our Father because you are bearing the name of Christ in your baptism. You are bearing Christ like a garment. In the same way that Jacob, or in a similar way that Jacob put on the garment of Esau, the hairiness of Esau, and approach the Father, you put on the righteousness of Christ and you approach the Father. And as a result of that, you end up getting the blessings of the Son of God. The blessings of the Son of God are given to you. And God doesn't remove those blessings. Now again, the distinction is Isaac was deceived, but he holds true to his blessings. God was not deceived, but God willingly gives you the blessings and sees you as he sees his own Son, Jesus. Again, this is, think about the language putting on Christ when you read through the story of Jacob disguising himself as Esau. All right, actually, let's end it there. We can do chapter 28 the next time, maybe, because Jacob has fun with Laban, or rather, Laban has fun with Jacob. Has some free work that he gets from Jacob. So we'll end that there for now. But yeah, definitely, I mean, if you see parallels between you and Christ and Jacob and Esau and stuff like that, it's definitely something to ponder over and to consider, because there are some connections there. So let's close with the doxology.